One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the latest edition of the Redmen TV Weekly Podcast, the show where we bring you some of the best clips from our Redmen Plus shows. Before we even start, just to let you know, if you want to listen to these shows in their entirety as podcast, or if you want to watch them as videos on your devices, if you head over to redmenplus.com, sign up as a yearly club captain. That would usually cost you £50 for the year. If you input the code weekly, WEEKLY, when you sign up as a yearly club captain, we'll give you it for half price, 50% off. So yeah, basically £25. Works out at less than 50p a week for all these shows. So yeah, if you're interested in what you're about to hear and you get to the end and you think, you know what, I really want to listen to those more or watch those more, head on over to redmenplus.com, yearly club captain, use the code weekly and grab yourselves an absolute massive, massive discount. Right then, let's get cracking with the first clip. We are speaking on the Biased Football Podcast. We love the Biased Football Podcast. Gives us a little chance to talk about other teams who aren't Liverpool, because sometimes Liverpool basically do our heads in. So yeah, it was me, it was Paul, it was Chris, and it was Chloe on this week's episode. Check this out.
Can I read some stats to you? Four shots to 23 shots. One shot on target to six shots on target. 27% possession to 73% possession. Nottingham Forest 1, Manchester City.
Have you seen the howlers? The howlers. The open goals that Manchester City missed. The first one's bad enough to hit the bar, to blaze it over from 2 yards out and practically kick it out of stadium. That is, I don't know what he's gone for there, right? Yeah, but it's absolutely astonishing how he's even been able to
imagine
do that.
How good he'd be if he could finish it.
And then, even like the Laporte header, like it just hits the goalie in the bollocks. Yeah. Like sometimes it just, you look, isn't in. City actually played quite well. I went back.
They had 73% of possession and had 23 shots on goal. Forest offered nothing in that football match.
Well, we were until watching, the momentum chart during the watch along for us, and it's crazy.
Yeah,
like they didn't have any momentum, Nottingham Forest, in the first half, not even a tiny.
I'm not even sure they got in the half. I only watched it back on the in preparation. I watched like the extended highlights, and it's all just Man City, yeah. And like, when Bernardo scores that goal, which I think the goalie probably should say, by the way, you think, oh, this is, well, the floodgates are open now on its own. It is just an anomaly. Like, that game...
But it's not. This is the point about City this season. And that's not necessarily, you know...
It goes back to your point
exactly
before.
How they lose games normally. Normally, it's, you actually go and have a go at them and you upset them and maybe you get a lead or whatever. But it's really encouraging to know that you can just dig in for your lives.
You know what,
like,
it's
people going, and we love watching them. We love working out ways to try and upset them. Good coach, you know, and they did.
You mentioned it before on the last show, like when you're heavily reliant on one fella to score all your goals, if he shits the bed and has a bad day, that's how you get in trouble. And that's the time when if your goals are spread around, right, Mo Salah's having an absolute stinker, they're Sadio Mane to pop, you know, or vice versa. They are so heavily reliant. Their team is built around getting him in the box and scoring chances. And listen, he's fucking brilliant at it. He's going to break Salah's record this season in the league. There's absolutely no question about it. But that's what can happen if you are so focused. If Harry Kane has a bad game in front of goal for Tottenham can't win. Man United might be in the same boat now with Rashford, I don't know. But that's what City found themselves the other day, is that somebody else, like Phil Foden has to score.
Yep.
And he tries to pass it to Haaland. Don't worry about him. Like, you fucking just score a goal. That's what they found themselves in. It might still work out for them because, like I say, he is that good that more often than not he will get those chances to score them. But if Erling Haaland has a bad game now, Man City don't win. And that's different from Man City of old. Like, there was four, five, six different players they could rely upon, and it doesn't feel like they can.
And that's what we're talking, Chloe, what you were talking about before. Like, those chances, he shits the bed with those chances. Yeah. And look, strikers can miss things. They can. No striker scores.
Done,
oh, God, no.
This season.
All good strikers miss chances. But when you need them to score, eventually the well's going to run dry and it's going to cost you.
Yeah, it is, and we've mentioned it. They rely on him. He is their vocal point. And we talk about this. Does he make them a worse team, a better team? He'll get goals and he'll be unbelievable for them. But you have to integrate it in where Bernardo Silva's an unbelievable footballer. I can't stand the lad. He should have more involvement. Mahrez should have more involvement. You're naming these players. Phil Foden's been absolutely incredible. I've hardly ever seen him this season. And when you said he was second in the Premier League for goals for Manchester City, I'm a bit surprised by that. And look, City, for some reason, the only time when they want to win a league is when Liverpool is there and when they physically have to beat us. And I don't think Arsenal have set the standards of Liverpool. And I think that's what City like. City like someone setting the standards for them to just go and basically bully them.
Arsenal kind of have. Their points total was mad.
Good.
The points total was ridiculous. They're on 54 points. They're on for 97. Like, it's mad. Like, they could be, but...
I don't think they're at 97.
I think we might have found Erling Haaland's kryptonite. Open goals, 5 yards out.
Stop defending him.
Yeah, like, just like, maybe let everyone should just give him that. Remember the league, the Community Shield when he missed one? Yeah, like, yeah. He's done that a few times. He's done it at Dortmund as well. Like, there's something about that guy where he is, like, because he's so strange and he's so unorthodox. Like, I don't know, anyone else just taps that in. Like, I don't know, there's something about, like, because he is such a bit, like, I don't know what it is. It's something like he wants to blam it in sometimes. Like, the goal he scored against Arsenal, ironically, was a touch
really
of class.
Good,
he can do that, but it's just odd. Like, when he finds himself, his go-to thing when he's 5 yards out is to just welly it. And that's all well and good if you decide. But, like, there's been a couple of times now with him, and he is sensational. He's one of the best finishers you will ever see. But, like I say, it feels like City got all the legs in one basket. Yeah. They've gone down the route of when everything's in the Haaland train. And
you know what they're missing
this
season? Raheem Sterling.
Yeah.
The second scorer.
Another a guy who scores 15 to 20 goals a season in addition,
like,
to your mate,
Grealish, like, they needed Grealish to step up and score goals, or whoever plays. Mahrez is, yeah, you are right, it's that secondary scorer. Kevin De Bruyne gets a couple that,
well, Kevin De Bruyne is their top league goal scorer last season and Sterling's second, you know, and De Bruyne has not been at that rate this season because, again, he hasn't had to be. Because his job now is to kick the ball to the lad who does.
His assist numbers are great.
I honestly think people are overanalyzing this too much. This is a transition year for Manchester City.
Yeah.
That's what people have got to remember. I think, you know, you've completely changed the type of striker that you've got up front. I mean, listen, Pep Guardiola didn't want Sergio Aguero, but Sergio Aguero sticks 7 seasons back to back for fucking City, scoring fucking loads and loads of goals. Pep Guardiola decided, I'm going to make our side work for Aguero. This Haaland chat is, it's nonsense. He's a fucking amazing player. And he will tear this league up for 10 more years.
He won't be here. That's the problem, he won't be here. I'm with you. They are in transition, but I don't think he's going to be around long enough, Haaland, to make it worth doing. You know what I mean?
Where'd he go?
Madrid.
I think at some point he'll go and...
Well, he's got a release clause at the end of the next season
for them,
hasn't he?
I think, yeah. So it's like,
is it just set up for Madrid?
I think so. Yeah,
I think it's outside the Premier League.
Take him.
It's one of them.
It's not a clause if ever available.
They haven't spent £100 million on Jack Grealish because he defends well. Like, you know, the Avans, he's there because he's meant to score goals for them, and I'm with you. I think they are transitioning to whatever they are now. We funnel everything towards Erling Haaland, and he'll score loads, and he will score. Like I say, he will break Salah's record of that, I'm certain. This season he'll score 33 Premier League goals at least.
Can I ask a question, though, on this? Because they clearly wanted Harry Kane.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they've obviously, for whatever reason, they didn't push the button on that. Maybe the
Daniel Levy didn't let them. Yeah.
Well, yeah, but they spent too much money.
I think they were worried
on...
about financial fair play.
Gotta follow those rules, guys.
Oh God!
Oh, the jokes.
But that's the kind of forward he clearly wanted. He wanted someone to knit the whole thing together, and then I don't know that he want. Not that he doesn't want Grealish and didn't want Haaland, but City have decided to go down the more of a Galacticos route in the last couple of seasons to go and get bigger names. Does make you wonder if they'd sign Kane. I think he would have been a more natural fit for what that City side had become than this, which you're right. It's a bit like they had a season where they didn't have a striker. So they made the ultimate Pep Guardiola side, and now they're having to go back to the Aguero thing, and it's made them one-dimensional, and that's what people say now. You don't even need to defend Haaland, because you can't defend against Erling Haaland. You're either trusting that he misses, or you go and boot the shite out of Kevin De Bruyne. But if for some reason either it doesn't click and it happens, you don't score a goal a game. Maybe on average over a season you do, because you'll score a hat-trick here, you'll score four there, but nobody scores in every single game of football, and they are so heavily weighted. And it might be a transition thing or whatever, but it's an interesting talking point, isn't it? Because they're not challenging the title this season, because they've gone down this route.
They're not that great at the back anymore. That's the thing as well. Like, man, everyone going on about City when we were winning leagues against them, or they were in the races against them, each other. Their defence was mean. Like, often they had more, you know, better clean sheet record and fewer goals conceded than us at times. It feels like quite easy to score, like, literally one chance, one goal. And it wasn't that hard to score that goal. It was a pretty, you know, Chris Woods on his own, two yards out. Yeah, it's interesting. They're not, like, I don't think Diaz is playing anywhere near that first level when he first arrived. They've got problems at fullback as well. Ironically, they let Zinchenko go. They probably could maybe he'd be playing, wouldn't he? You'd think now.
Well, they've let two fullbacks go.
Yeah, and then they wanted Cucurella. Remember, maybe I don't know either got him, but like they're not right at really. And like I say, I think John Stones is brilliant. I think Ruben Diaz is brilliant. I think Laporte's brilliant. But whether it's systematic or something, like, but then he played Rodri at centre half against the Arsenal. He pepped it against Arsenal, but he changed it and changed it back again.
But notice this thing on the centre half's chat, by the way? Everyone, ever since Virgil van Dijk's come into the Premier League, there's the new best centre half in the Premier League every single season. This is the guy. He's better than Virgil van Dijk. Him. Oh, and then you get all the memes and you get that. And oh, look, here's Virgil van Dijk getting dribble past. He can't be that good. La la la. There seems to be a new one every single time. I'm sorry, but Laporte's not that good. Ruben Diaz is not that good. And now you've got Saliba, is it, at Arsenal, who's had an absolute stinker of a fortnight for them as well. Just think it's quite funny. You're right, is that City are supposed to be a much better defensive side. They don't even play really play attacking fullbacks either. You know, they keep playing Nathan Ake at fullback, for God's sake, you know. And they're a bit of a mess of a side. And again, Haaland, I just think is scoring them out of trouble at the minute, because he's so much better than the vast majority of teams that he's coming up against.
Right, then moving away from other clubs, we're back to talking about the Reds. Soz, about that. Unfortunately, yeah, the Reds didn't exactly cover themselves in glory against Real Madrid on Tuesday night, did they? Well, some therapeutic sessions. We've been saying that a lot recently, haven't we? Some therapy on the final word show this week. It was Paul, it was Steve Plunkett, and it was Andy Bell, like I say, on the final word show, dissecting the wreckage that was Liverpool 2, Real Madrid 5.
The optimism had really turned the corner going into this one, and you really felt it, I think, in the build-up to this to this game. I thought everything just felt like it was back. You know, everything was going in the right direction. The atmosphere on the ground was great. Went to do the coach greeting, brilliant. You know, like, really great atmosphere, all that kind of stuff. Get into the grounds, Anfield is bouncing, the songs are there, the support, Spy and Cop got the flags out again. Just feels right. And yeah, we started like an absolute house on fire.
Yeah, it was a typical Anfield early blitz in Europe. It was amazing. The atmosphere was top quality. you know, we get an early goal. Nunez is back in form. Salah makes it two, and like you're starting to think, like, could this be sort of like City in 2018? Can we get 3, 4, 5 even to take to the Bernabeu, which now sounds absolutely ridiculous and naive and ludicrous, but that's how I was feeling at the time. I was thinking before the game, you know, any sort of win would have been nice, but to go 2-0 up so early, you are starting to think, you know, let's really go for the jugular here. But it wasn't to be. We concede a really world-class goal, and then I think the second kills us going into the second half, because 2-1 at half time, you're still saying good performance, and
Andy, we're meant to be doing the good stuff. Sorry. So chronologically people can turn off when they need to. Let's not burn through the good stuff too quickly on this one. Just going back to the start of the game, Steve, Liverpool had the right approach. You know, it was a classic Liverpool European under the lights performance, where we really got in their faces, we were aggressive, the noise levels were up, they couldn't breathe, they couldn't turn, they couldn't manufacture more than a handful of touches on the ball. I just thought we were great, you know, and it really did give so much encouragement that it was well within the capabilities of this side to get something out of the game.
Absolutely. All the noise, you know, the lads looked like they were looking forward to the game, which is not something we've been able to say too much this season. The next game round the corner is a task. It's arduous, and it means trying to get things right. But off the back of 2 clean sheets, 2 wins, 6 points, the feeling was good. The players came out. It's like rolling back, like Andy says, it was like rolling back the years to some of our previous Champions League campaigns. And we were so on the front foot. The front three were electric. You know, the flick from Nunez is absolutely sumptuous, isn't it? What a goal that is for the first goal.
Yes, absolutely. I think he's really struggled since the World Cup.
Yeah.
And I think you can see, and all season, I think he's got in his own head a little bit. And I think having some fans on his back and all those kind of things have definitely contributed to that. But this last week, he's felt like the Darwin Nunez that I think we felt we were getting. From Benfica, the one we saw up close and personal, that finish is a pure confidence finish. Mm. You don't try them, let alone score them, unless you're really in a good place. And it looked like he was absolutely thriving in that environment.
Yeah, we saw the Nunez that turned up with Benfica last night, didn't we? In the early stages, he was a proper thorn in the side. The technique to do that's absolutely ridiculous, because that ball is fizzed in. It's not
a football player that it reminds you of most.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number 1 in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Doing that?
Yeah.
Hard to say. Have you got one in mind?
John Barnes.
You think so?
Yeah.
He would have tried that, wouldn't he?
He did it against Crewe once in a cup game.
Daniel Agger did it in the Europa League, didn't he?
Bobby did it against...
Bobby's goal.
Did Robbie Keane do it once?
I mean, Robbie Keane has scored that many goals in his career. This is for us. Yeah, not for us. Yeah.
But more the point is the timing of it, the magnitude of the game, the opposition, the fact that, as you said, he's not had the season we would have wanted from start to where we are now. But the signs in recent weeks are this guy's going to be a thorn in everybody's side. The goal to try that against Real Madrid, that 4 minutes into the game, and to, sorry, and to do it that
you
way.
Saying Goth, you're doing an Andy impression there for a second there. Well, No, no, you're right. The temerity to try to score a backheel flick from across against the guy who was man of the match in the Champions League final in that environment. No, I thought it was absolutely brilliant. And it kind of, that all added to the tone, I thought, Andy, because we had this thing going into it of like Thibaut Courtois, oh my God, you know, he's a brilliant goalkeeper. I also know that he can have games where he's not brilliant. We remember him from Chelsea. But there was an aura off the back of the Champions League final, and to just come in and score that past him, again, it was like, it took the pressure off the whole team. It was going, well, yeah, we don't have to work super hard. We don't have to put the ball pinpoint into bottom corners to get past this guy. And obviously it's exacerbated even further by the fact that he effectively just knees one into the path of Salah a couple minutes later. But that, again, Nunes kicked that all off for us, because when you score that, it's a bit like Messi's penalty in the World Cup final, of like, if you do something that wild, it kind of sends, it sets the tone for the rest of the team on the night. Well, it was meant to.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that first goal is just amazing. I mean, it's a great ball from Salah, but there's still, he needs to get a lot of purchase on that flick. You know what I mean? A lot of players try that and they don't get enough purchase on it. They make contact, but nothing else really. And that would have been an easy save for him. But he actually directs it past him, and you know, it's an incredible flick. And then the second one is just, it's just endemic of the Anfield atmosphere. It's endemic of the pure panic that was instilled into Real Madrid at that time. And we capitalised on it. And, we get that second goal. And, you know, it comes from good pressing, which we haven't really seen enough of this season, certainly. Obviously, the midfielder are a bit older now and can't get about the pitch as much. But that first sort of 15, 20 minutes, if you target those moments, and you have to target the first 20 minutes at Anfield in a European night, then you're able to force them into mistakes. And it sort of comes from, I think it's Carvajal, plays a bit of a horrible ball to him. Now, he still should put it into the stands like Alisson should, as we'll come on to talk about. But it comes from that. And yeah, it was just, they were trying to play it out. They were trying to get the ball on the floor with their players like Modric and Camavinga, who were so impressive on the night. But first 15, 20 minutes, they were rattled, and you could see that.
It was just brilliant. And obviously, Mo, worth a mention, because it'll get lost in all the rest of the noise around the game. Stay, you know, our all-time record goal scorer. Brilliant moment for him. And it's almost a shame that we're not sat here talking about this, because that's a big moment, you know, to finally overtake Steven Gerrard. He's been absolutely brilliant for the club. I thought he was brilliant in that opening as well for us. He was such a threat. Unfortunately, it's been a bit of the nature of Salah's season that he had that really, really bright start to the game, and much like the rest of the side, his influence waned as the game wore on, really.
Yeah, I mean, prior to his goal, he went past a couple, and he's only got the goalkeeper to beat, and he doesn't hit the target. And I'm screaming, square it, because if he squares it, Gakpo's got a side foot and it's 2-0. But we go through that, and then obviously, I think Courtois trying to lift the ball over him, and it actually rattles between his knees. He's got the longest legs you've ever seen, so that's a long way away, the ball, isn't it, from your face when you're that tall? And then obviously Salah finishes it with aplomb. And there's other chances in the first half that we created a lot. You know, the start was bright, the start was effective. We really had them on the back foot. We did have them rattled. We certainly had them rattled. I think if there was a stage when it was, I think it was 2-1, we'll talk about it when they block one on the line. That's the difference for me.
We will come to that. I mean, the first Real Madrid goal, I'm thinking a bit, that's a bit against the script. That's kind of not meant to happen, but I think it's a really good goal. I mean, there's an argument that, you know, we can get a little bit tighter to him, maybe. I don't know. I've seen Arjen Robben do the reverse of that goal for an entire career. And no one goes, you know, eventually everyone goes, well, he's so good that that's his goal and that's how he's going to score. I'm happy to kind of say, well, if you duck past like three Liverpool players and bend it into the bottom corner past Alisson, you do deserve a little bit of credit. But in that regard, and it was okay. We were still in good shape there. You know, the fact that, and Steve mentioned it, we go down the other end and Carvajal puts in one of the all-time great blocks to stop Darwin Nunes from converting. That ends up being a big moment, because if we're just able to shuffle that across the line, I think the momentum comes straight back to Liverpool, and you get to treat that as, okay, well, you've had your little moment. This is us, though. We're right on top. But unfortunately, what happens is Alisson then just has a total brain fart in front in his own 18-yard box. And it's sad to say, because it's so early into the game still, it's actually the moment that basically kills Liverpool off in the game.
Yeah, it is. I think it's either that or the goal just after half time, which really sort of makes a difference and really kills us off. I think, you know, we get 2-0 up, and I mean, that's an absolutely glorious goal from Vinicius, from an absolutely superb player. I mean, he's not just speed in behind, he killed us with the verticals, remember, in that COVID season, with his runs in behind Nat Phillips, and he shows he's got that other side to his game as well. And, you know, I was other end of the
ground. He's more than just being able to run behind Nat Phillips.
Yeah, well, yeah. Probably good to have an extra sort of string group over there. Like, you know.
Yeah. It's quite a common string, I think, in football.
Yeah, I think so. I think a few of us around this table might have that string to our bows. But, you know, I'm other end of the ground, in the lower main, towards the away fans. And you're looking at it in the position, and you're not, like, your heart's not in your mouth, you know, like it was when Modric skipped past two or three of our players going to talk about for the fifth goal. You're not thinking this is an amazing position. He sort of makes something out of nothing. And yes, we probably should get a block in. There's four or five players around him. And I think Alisson then reads it a couple of moments later, because Vinicius almost scores the exact same goal. And it's a really, really good save, but you certainly can't blame the keeper for the first one.
Right then, thanks to Paul and the guys for that one. Moving on, Dan Club was back with yet another expert insight, and this one might be a topical one considering what happened in that Real Madrid game. Dan was discussing with Dr. Konstantin Ekner. He, for those who don't know, by the way, a commentator and reporter over in Germany. Big, 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 big guy over there. Yeah, loves the footy, loves talking about it, and loves reporting on it as well. Dan spoke to Dr. Ekner about Jurgen Klopp. What does Jurgen do about rebuilding the Liverpool side, who, quite frankly, I say, have looked a bit of a shadow of their former selves. So, yeah, here is Dan with Dr. Ekner.
Jurgen Klopp has said he's 100% committed to the upcoming project. He has too much responsibility and he doesn't want it to end, and he wants to sort it again. So, let's get into it. Jurgen Klopp, he mastered his trade at Mainz, I think it's fair to say. Mm-hmm. He then went on to rejuvenate Borussia Dortmund. Now, he has got a history for cleaning up messes of football clubs. He arrived in Dortmund in 2008, and they'd been through three managers the year before. Now, I didn't realise that until researching for this. And they'd had their worst Bundesliga season in 20 years. What made him the right man for the job at the time?
I mean, Dortmund were a little bit out of options, to be fair, right? I mean, they just went through a number of managers the previous couple of years, and they were looking for someone, maybe not for one of the old-fashioned, the old-school kind of managers, because they had a couple of them before. Yeah. But you looked for a younger guy, someone with a certain charisma, who might also bring something new to a club, because Dortmund, they still had a lot of fans, a lot of matchday spectators. There are still 60,000 or so went, on average at least, to the games, even though they were struggling heavily. But there wasn't really anyone representing the club in a positive manner. The players were average. The team was as mid-table as it gets, to be honest. You know, it was just average written all over the club. So they were looking for someone who might bring something new, bring a breath of fresh air. And Klopp, what he did, I mean, yes, he had success with Mainz, which is a smaller club overall, right? Not much funding behind it, and not a big time traditional city of big time football, but he also was the television expert at the World Cup in 2006 at the home World Cup, basically, you know, hosted by Germany, and he was there, and he basically represented himself in the best light possible, to be honest. Like, he was eloquent, he was funny, he was just how you got to know him when he came to Liverpool, but even even a little bit younger, you know, like kind of the 30 year old or the 30 something year old, was just winning hearts left and right, basically. So, and Dortmund thought, like, all right, why not him? Because he's all smiles, a positive energy, can talk well, also something, can talk to the media well, can maybe even sell a few defeats well, because that was also a problem. But like, when Dortmund lost, no one had an explanation, and everyone was on the edge, basically.
Right.
Because one of the coaches before was Thomas Doll, and he and once upon a time said, when he was criticized for the performance of his team, was like, oh, I'm laughing my ass off. That's actually a quote in German, but still.
Yeah.
And he was screaming at journalists and stuff like that. So, all right, they needed something else. So they brought in Klopp with the hope that maybe he can revitalize Dortmund. And obviously it took him two or three years because the team was as average as I just mentioned, and you can't just turn a ship on a dime. That's not possible. but he managed to do it, and they also gave him time, and they also saw improvement from the beginning. I think he finished eighth in the first year, sixth in the seventh in the second year. So you saw kind of, you know, where that might go. No one expected him to win the German championship or get to the final of the Champions League. But I mean, why not? It turned out well.
Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned some of his key traits there, sort of his likability, his personality. What do you think was so important in the early years at Dortmund to get people on side? And to really, you mentioned the success he had, but he went about transforming that Dortmund side and club indeed. What were the key factors behind that, would you say?
Yeah, I mean, of course, first was tactics, and he is kind of a student of that pressing style that now a lot of people know and got to know over the years, right?
Yeah.
And it was something that was not really developed. I mean, there were in the previous decades, there were also coaches applying similar things tactically, surely not with like the now modern back four and stuff like that, but still, I mean, he wasn't the first one. I mean, that would be ridiculous. But still, I mean, he kind of picked up some things he knew. He watched a lot of other high-level coaches and tried to mold his system, which of course worked well, especially for a side that was struggling to create chances to play an attacking style. It just being very pressing heavy, winning the ball back, you know, creating that fast-paced style worked quite well. And also, on the other hand, what his leadership skills. I mean, they showed early on, and I think what he does well is also making, let's say, average or slightly above average player just better by making them believe in themselves. Because, I mean, you can be like a mid-table player and you can say, yeah, well, I'm not good enough to play for the national team. Maybe I'm good enough to play in the first league, but I will never be anything special.
Yeah.
And he can kind of create that. They can put them in a good headspace, make them believe that maybe they are special. And what he did in the first few years at Dortmund was taking players like Lukas Piszczek, for instance, the right back, who was like an average wide winger at Hertha Berlin before that. Got a few goals, but it's like no one really talked about him. And then he put him into the Dortmund team and made him believe that you can be a special kind of right back and you can be a world beater. And I mean, a few years later, Piszczek had these duels with Cristiano Ronaldo in a couple of Champions League games. And he I think he contained Ronaldo quite well. So, I mean, that's kind of the club magic, you know, making people believe. If he also believes in players, because I think when we now talk about a rebuild.
Yeah.
Klopp is loyal to players who have done well for him in the past, right? Yeah. And maybe there's some degree of loyalty that might be detrimental to, you know, the success of a team. He might stick to players for a bit too long. But what also Klopp can be a little bit ruthless if he sees a player and thinks, all right, there's nothing, there's no trait that is helping me or the team. Then he can also tell the player off and say, mate, look for another team. I can't do anything with you. He can be like that. But if he believes in players, if he believes in their mentality, their athletic abilities, their technical abilities, at least to an extent, then he can work with them and then he wants to make them better. So he can also be a little bit ruthless. There are players who have told stories about Klopp essentially saying to them, well, you're not good enough for me. Sorry. look elsewhere, not here.
Yeah.
He can be a little bit like that. It's maybe underestimated at times. Because in the end, like Klopp can be all smiles, but he wants to win. And he wants to win trophies and he wants to, you know, be number one. I mean, that's his objective.
Yeah, absolutely. The two loyal tag has actually been labelled at him in this country as well recently, with certain players especially. It's something I think is one of his biggest strengths, but can also be a weakness because, like I say, players who've been willing to run through brick walls for him, he does stand by them, maybe a little bit too long in certain cases. But just coming back to, before we sort of move on a little bit towards what happened towards the end of his time at Dortmund, how important were transfers, particularly in the early days when he took over the job at Borussia? How important were his signings? And do you think signings could be a key part of what he has to do at Liverpool next?
Yeah, I mean, of course, it's a completely different situation with Liverpool because there's much more money that should be, might be available. I know some fans doubt that FSG is actually making the funds available. But still, I mean, overall, the bank account of Liverpool right now is much, much larger than what Dortmund had at that time, because we shouldn't forget that in the mid-aughts, in the mid-2000s, Dortmund were on the verge of insolvency. Yeah. And even though they prevented that from happening, still they had trouble really in terms of like cash being available for them to make transfers, and you have to have some cash available. So transfers were a big part because Dortmund had a few young academy graduates like Mario Götze, but only a few. And even some of the academy graduates left Dortmund because they didn't really saw a future there. Okay. They thought like elsewhere might be a bit more fruitful to be there instead of Dortmund, because Dortmund was a bit, excuse my French, but was a bit of a shit show for a time. Let's be honest. So a few academy graduates, yes, but also they needed transfers. And I mentioned Piszczek, who came for nothing, basically. Shinji Kagawa, who moved to Dortmund for, I think, 300,000 euros, basically in today's world, nothing. So he needed transfers, he needed to make transfers, he needed to make signings, but cheap ones that still worked out. And he managed it. I mean, of course, there were also some players who didn't work out, and they went away again. But they tried that. They tried to find these few players, maybe underappreciated, undervalued, and we pick them up and we make them into something. Mm-hmm. And I think Klopp managed that. But he needed signings, because otherwise the team he had was a team of mid to late 20-year-olds and early 30-year-olds were, as I said, some of them were just as mid-table as it gets, and they didn't do anything after they left Dortmund, to be honest. Mm. Like, they just, you know, they went away, basically, or played second division football.
Right then, moving on, it's Jano Insight time. It was me and Neil Jones who literally flew in from New York from his holidays, drove straight here to the studio and filmed the show. What an absolute legend Neil is. He loves doing the show. He loves bringing you guys that insight. So yeah, fair play to Neil and his commitment, and thank you to his missus as well for allowing him to jump off a plane and come straight here, by the way. Right then, we spoke about Gvardiol, RB Leipzig centre half, Liverpool linked with him by Fabrizio Romano earlier in the week. I asked Neil about that and what his potential arrival or interest in him means for the futures of both Joel Matip and Joe Gomez. Check this out. Josko Gvardiol, obviously anyone who watched Manchester City versus RB Leipzig yesterday evening at the time of recording will have seen he scored Leipzig's goal in that 1-1 draw. Fabrizio Romano was speaking about him, transfer guru himself, basically saying many top clubs are monitoring him, including Chelsea. Obviously Chelsea wanted to sign him very, very recently. They want him last summer. Man City and also Liverpool, there's a lot of interest around him. Leipzig want him to be the most expensive centre-back ever. Liverpool have sent their scouts to watch the player multiple times in the last couple of months. You spoke a few weeks ago, you wrote it, and then you spoke about it on this show. Like, there's chatter that this could be the end of Joel Matip's Liverpool career by this summer. We've already discussed today, like, Joe Gomez's positioning within this squad now is severely in doubt, because it's hard to rely on that guy at the moment. Ibu Konate's injury record is a concern. I think Virgil van Dijk isn't Virgil van Dijk of a couple of years ago. So you've been saying for a while there's a centre-half conundrum coming down, and there it is. It does feel like, again, something's going to happen at centre-half, whether it's Gvardiol or something else, but he would be, you know, he ticks a lot of boxes in terms of age, profile, how many games he's played, the club he's at. You know, if you're making a list of things Liverpool like, he's on a lot of those.
Yeah, probably apart from price, isn't it? It's probably the only one.
Yeah.
You know, if you're talking about the most expensive centre-back ever. He's really good, isn't he? You know, I think we saw it at the World Cup, really. I know his World Cup gets remembered for sort of Lionel Messi making a mug of him, but a very harsh sort of way to think about. He was one of the best centre-backs at the World Cup, you know, and that's on Messi as opposed to on Gvardiol. I watched the Leipzig game last night, actually, in the airport in New York. I watched the second half of it, and I thought they were brilliant, Leipzig. I thought they were really, really good, and he was a massive, massive part of it. I think he's gonna go to a top club. I think there was a comment, I think Marco Rose, the coach, said something along the lines of, we are having him next season. He will be a Leipzig player next season. He said he's made no secret of the fact he wants to play in the Premier League, but he never said when. I think that was a quote I saw. He's going to play in the Premier League, I think, quite clearly. You know, he was talking about close to joining Leeds, wasn't he, a while back?
He nearly joined Chelsea.
Yeah, he nearly joined Chelsea last summer. I think he nearly joined Leeds maybe when they first came up into the Premier League, which I think they'd have done all right. Mm-hmm. They probably wouldn't be where they are now if they had him at centre-back. He's going to play in the Premier League. He's going to go for big money. No question about it. You look at him left-sided, centre-back, rare in themselves. High level, good on the ball. Looks like a winner to me. Looks like someone who, you know, he's a leader almost. I don't know about him, sort of, whether that's how he's seen at Leipzig as a big communicator and that kind of thing. But the way he plays is one that sort of I could see people following him, you know, and saying, oh yeah, go on, that's
is
great.
Is he someone whose name you've heard come up in conversations? Because you've been on this actually a long time. You've been saying it to me for a while on air, and I feel like centre half is something that you need. Because everyone's been going Bellingham, midfield, Nunes, Mount, midfield. And I say, actually, no, there's something over here. I'd like to think Liverpool have got a list.
You would definitely think so. I mean, they've put themselves in a. It didn't feel like a problem, did it? 10 months ago, four really, really good centre backs, you know, on the day. But you've seen Matip lose his way. You've seen Gomez lose his way. Canate's obviously had a season disrupted heavily by injuries. So is Virgil van Dijk. His four-man injuries have dipped, or form has dipped, and injuries have struck. I mean, Guardiola's a left-sided centre-back, so that's Virgil's side, isn't it? So succession planning would tell you probably a left-sided centre-back in the next year or two definitely must be on the agenda, mustn't it? You know, you can't expect any player to go into the sort of late 30s, let alone one who's had an ACL injury. You know, he might, but you still need to be sort of thinking about what comes down the line. I haven't heard Guardiola sort of suggested as like, oh yeah, he's the one Liverpool wants, or he's on a list. But listen, if he isn't on a list, then they're not doing their job properly, are they? You know, there's not many world-class centre-backs that I see, potential world-class centre-backs. You know, I think you've seen how much clubs have struggled to find centre-backs, you know. I mean, Chelsea are still relying on Thiago Silva. You know, they've spent a lot of money on players that you'd say are maybes, you know, Badiashile and Wesley Fofana, people like that. City have obviously ended up sort of getting a surprise signing in someone like Akanji and Nathan Ake. They were players who you wouldn't have said, oh, God.
But did they spend big on Ruben Diaz?
Yeah, of course. But even he, I mean, he's been in and out the side this season. Laporte's been in and out the side. You know, there's a lot of clubs. You know, you look at Arsenal, but Ben White for big money and end up having to play him at right back.
Mate, I've got the list here, because as you mentioned before, Leipzig saying about the most expensive players.
Yeah, so Harry Maguire.
Harry Maguire's top. De Ligt is second. Doesn't even play there anymore.
He's gone. Yeah.
There's Van Dijk. Fofana says Liverpool. Fofana obviously to Chelsea. Lucas Hernandez, Ruben Diaz, De Ligt again. Obviously the second one, Hakimi. So Marco Corella's on there. Like the list of if you're talking about the most expensive defender of all time, it's about £78 million for Harry Maguire. That's the one where you think. Right, because we know Liverpool are in need of major midfield surgery. We know that if the money is all going towards that, I know the comments therefore from Leipzig actually could help Liverpool out. If it's we're not going to sell him this summer, it's the year after.
Yeah,
because Liverpool might have to go one more. Joe Matip's future dependent, but if they're going to, if that might be something that actually benefits us, I don't know.
Yeah, you don't. And also, listen, I'm playing devil's advocate a little bit with myself here, but you don't know how. Them centre-backs can look $1 million if you can sort the rest of the team out. You know, they can have cigars out next season, and you look at Joe Gomez and say, what a player, Rolls Royce, look at him, you know, just sort of bringing the ball out from the back and having to do the odd occasional run back towards his own goal and stop a counter-attack. At the moment, all of those players look massively exposed and confidence is low and they look insufficient at this moment. We know that somewhere in there is... It's a Premier League title winning centre back in Gomez, a world class centre back in Van Dijk. I think will be a world class centre back in Canate. And Joel Matip's been an excellent player for Liverpool for many years. I think Matip is the one that I think Liverpool will sell him in the summer. I think he will go. The fact that he's not in the side at the moment is a reflection of that, you know, and that. You know, he's had his own struggles in recent weeks, you know, not least in that the Wolves and the Brighton games. He's not had a good season.
If you're trying to get a new contract, which is probably what he's after, because he's down to he's come up to a year left. This isn't the season you want to go into into that.
No, exactly that. And if you're thinking about Liverpool, we're talking about money and we're talking about saleable assets. He's not a particularly saleable asset because of his age. But he's more saleable than a lot of others. And Joe Gomez has got a new contract in the bag. He's a homegrown player. He plays right back. he's still young enough that you say, well, you can still take another punt on it. I'm not sure I would necessarily, but I think Liverpool probably will. I think Matip's the one that you're looking at and saying, well, if we are going to bring in a centre back, I think it's going to be a Matip replacement, yeah. Which probably rules out Guardiola at this stage because of A, the price, but also where he plays. I think that it'd be a right-sided centre back.
I suppose, Neil, as well, if you, again, we do this often, the sale of assets and the money stuff. Like, if Liverpool, we are worried, not so much worried, but we're talking about money, and obviously we imagine a lot of that, if not most of it's going to go on a midfield. Selling Joel Matip, and again, I've been saying this for how many windows, but selling Nat Phillips and then just bringing one in, and then you've got like a Reece Williams or something as your fifth option he's around, or whoever it is. That could be one way where, because that's the thing I'm thinking now, yeah. It's like, signing fourth choice players, I'm never a big fan of it because you're thinking, well, they're fourth choice for a reason. But maybe if you can offset it by selling those two and get yourself a really quality player, maybe someone who goes above Joe Gomez in the pecking order, I think that should be the ideal situation.
I think, to be honest, just to move on, just a more general point, I think Liverpool have to, they can't think like that. They can't be thinking we're going to buy a squad player. This is the team now, isn't it? This is not our bench is weak. Or you know, we need another game changer to come on and you know, in tight games, or to help us compete on multiple fronts in the cup competition. This is the team. The actual team is weak at the moment, or too weak. Yeah. So this has to be players who you think they can be our first choice. You know, all right, maybe not immediately. You know, I think Kanate is a good sort of benchmark, if you want to call it that. You know, I don't think anyone, or I don't think everyone sort of thought, well, he goes straight into Liverpool's team. You know, Kanate. I don't think people thought about Luis Diaz when he signed. I don't think everyone said, well, he goes there, he's straight on the left. You know, they still had Mane, they still had Firmino, Jota. You know, but they knew that he was capable of it. They knew that he had the talent, and he showed it straight away, didn't he? Kanate took a little bit longer. You know, you've seen Nunes. I think Nunes is coming into his own, you know, or will come into his own in the coming months and years. But he's another one, isn't he, that, you know, at the start of the season, I think he started the season on the bench, didn't he, at Fulham. But you knew that he will get in the team at some point. You know, he will be capable. You can't be buying sort of Shaqiris and people like that, and Minaminos, who you're saying, well, they're just a nice little pick up there and they can go on the bench, and you know, in certain games you can bring him on. It has to be now players that now he can come in and immediately sort of challenge to strengthen the first 11, and that's where Liverpool are at. So whoever they sign, whether it's a centre back, whether it's a midfielder, whether it's a forward, whether it's another goalkeeper, almost, you know, they need to be players who, in any given game, you can say, well, they're going to start, and you know, if they play well, they keep the shirt.
Yeah, absolutely. Looking then to the centre back plans, it feels like, and you again, correct me if I'm wrong, it feels like it could be Phillips and Matip out, and maybe one coming in, as well as a midfield, maybe two or three. Like, that's a big summer. Like, that's very un-Liverpool. Like, not in terms of, only in terms of money, which we know, like, it is no way it's available for a variety of reasons. And secondly, just in terms of actual turnover of players,
yeah,
that would be like that. That would be the rebuild, and almost, like, you know, three in, five out. That's very un-Liverpool like. But I suppose that's where we found ourselves now. That's needed. Yeah. It's almost a necessity now.
Yeah, and you know, you look at that. If you want a benchmark or a barometer of sort of what they need, really, you look at that sort of June 2017 to July 2018. Robertson, Salah, Fabinho, Van Dijk, Alisson, Keita. They all came in for big money, except for Robertson, and to go into the first team. They were signings that were made to strengthen the first team. That's, you know, that's what Liverpool need now. They need sort of four or five players that can be part of the next Liverpool team. I think they've got some of them already. You know, I think Kanate, I think Nunes, Diaz, promising signs from Gakpo as well. Yeah.
I want to speak to you about Joe Gomez, if you don't mind me doing that quickly.
Okay.
Is he a little bit lucky, maybe, that so much change is needed, and also we think Joe Matip might be on his way out, because the ruthlessness inside, you could go, you know what, we might just give up on him.
Yeah.
And the fact that he's English, well, helps with the homegrown stuff, because he feels like, you know, you need new wallpaper in the living room, but by the way, the kitchen's flooded, so you can't, it needs doing, but, you know, we're not going to do it just yet, because, I mean, the more people you listen to about Joe Gomez, and unfortunately, the more we see of him, it's getting worse. It's getting to a point where, like, you've got a lad in your team and you don't think you can rely on anymore. And that, again, we haven't been there for a long time, really. We've been, you know, I mean, since maybe Dejan left, and everyone was a bit worried about Dejan. Since then, really, you haven't had lads in your team, and you're thinking, I just don't know. We can't rely on him. We don't know what we're going to get. We're worried about him playing. Very rarely do we get that.
Yeah. And you're right. I worried when he had the injury that it was... His injury history is... It's appalling for him, you know, in terms of his...
And a lot of them aren't his
poor lads, you know, like he's had so much. He's had a broken ankle. He's had a broken leg. So he's had ankle ligaments. He's broken leg, cruciate ligaments. You know, patella rupture. 25, 26 years of age. You know, so much sort of wear and tear on him. But not only that, you know, so much sort of time lost developing his game as well. Yeah. You know, in terms of training and you know we know his gifts. You know, he's lightning quick.
But the fact that he got that ball in the first place ahead of Vinicius, that just shows he has got that.
Well, also...
And he was in the right place.
the one criticism... Listen, bottom line, Joe Gomez is a great, great guy, right? So Joe Gomez... This is not gratuitous criticism of Joe. This is me not wanting to say these kind of things because... But his weakness, Joe Gomez's big weakness, is Liverpool's big weakness this season. He's not aggressive enough, whether it's in the air, whether it's on the ground. The foul he gives away on Vinicius is him almost forcing himself to be aggressive because he knows he can't afford to sort of not go in for this tackle. But actually, he either needed to be completely, you know, right through and take everything or stand off. But he's between because he doesn't know what he's, you know, he's doing something that he's not comfortable doing, flying into a tackle, and he gives away a free kick. But that's his weakness. He's not aggressive enough. And if Liverpool are going to be what they are and get that gnarl and that snarl and that real sort of energy and all those kind of things back that we associate with them and we associate with the Jurgen Klopp side, I'm not sure he's there. I'm not sure he's going to be able to be part of that. You know, with him, maybe we'll be proven wrong. Maybe, you know, look, he has to work through a bad patch and he gets a run on the side and the manager says, look, you're my guy. Just come on, get yourself back to where you were 2-3 years ago. I don't see it.
Yeah, thanks again to Neil for literally jumping off an airplane and coming down to talk to us about the Reds. Fantastic show. Really enjoy filming it. Hope you guys enjoy it when you do go and check out the whole episode. Right then, moving on. Chris Pajak and Josh Williams. It's the deep dive, and yet the big topic everyone's talking about is Liverpool's midfield. The guys have a little chat about Tchouaméni. Liverpool didn't get him, but why and why they A, didn't get a replacement, and B, why they really, really, really should have got a replacement. Yeah, check out the clip from the deep dive.
And Tchouaméni was another one of those midfielders, but Liverpool didn't get him. And it's difficult to kind of determine what life would be like now if he had have arrived. Would he have given everyone the boost just in terms of morale and things like that? I think a new signing can do that for you. Would he have been available all season? Would Liverpool have won the ball more? Would Liverpool have been this as easy as they have been to cut open? And I don't think he would have been like a complete solution on his own, but I do think he would have been a massive fix for a lot of the leaks that we've seen this season. Liverpool obviously didn't buy anyone, as you said earlier. Loaned Arthur Melo, who's a completely different type of player, by the way. And we now have to get an alternative for him this summer.
Yeah. And so can I ask you a question there?
Go on.
I think, you know, Bellingham, Tchouaméni, was it ever one or the other for you?
I've thought about this. This is an interesting one, because if the plan was to get both, I mean, that's one hell of a midfield, and that's one hell of a way of moving past.
It's also what Real are saying.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that makes sense. It makes sense.
And they've got players, got good players. Yeah. But Valverde, Camavinga, Modric, I mean, Cruz, they've got players.
I know, it's scary, isn't it?
Sweaty bastards.
But I think Klopp has been, like, really wedded to, like, Henderson, Milner, Wijnaldum, players like that over the years, hasn't he? He's been really reluctant to upgrade on them.
Till death do us part for Jake Milner and Henderson, literally.
Yeah, proper.
Proper wed.
I think he's kind of probably said to the transfer committee or whatever, if I'm going to move past Milner, it's going to have to be a worldie, you know? Yeah. And that's where you've got
to... Hold them to ransom. We're going to play James again in midfield this season.
Yeah. Well, I think it's interesting that initially after losing out on Tchouaméni, that's when we give Milner a one-year contract extension then. Because I think if Tchouaméni had signed, maybe Milner moves on and we go through this period of...
Who would we have as our backup right back?
Well, that was why we got Calvin Ramsey in.
Well, I know. That's why I'm asking the question,
Josh. He's never fit, is he?
So who would we have had? Yeah. Is it just Joe?
Probably would have been Gomez, yeah.
And Joe's our centre-half now?
Yeah.
Bloody
but
hell,
this summer we are tasked with essentially getting Bellingham in as whether he's an alternative to Tchouaméni or the plan was to always get him all along. And if the plan was to always get him all along, then we still have to get an alternative to Tchouaméni from somewhere else. And whoever that player might be, I mean, I've got a few rough names who might fit the bill. For example, Moises Caicedo is a definite ball winner, but I think there's going to be real competition for his services, and I think Brighton want to get paid in that sense.
Might just want to stay at Brighton the way we've been playing.
Potentially, I mean, they're going to finish above us, aren't they, probably, the way it's going at the minute. Tchouaméni had a partner at Monaco called Youssef Fofana. He was a good midfielder, played for France at the World Cup. I also think a bit of a wild card option is Tyler Adams at Leeds.
Okay.
Only been near a year, and he's nowhere near the same level, but he's a really industrious workhorse, like a piano carrier of what Liverpool have had early in Klopp's tenure.
Are we talking more in the Wijnaldum mould?
Yeah, just kind of a proper grafter, like Milner and Henderson 5 years ago. That kind of mould, nothing special, no stardust, but he will be a functional player and he'll let everyone else take the risks and get the wins, and he'll just kind of cover the ground in the middle. There's also a lad for PSV called Ibrahim Sangare, who we got linked with a little bit last season. He was linked to Chelsea and stuff, but he's like 6'3", wins the ball a lot, good on the ball and stuff. But who will Liverpool get? I mean, we're with Matthias Nunes, aren't we?
Mm.
I don't know what you think about that. I'm not sure on that one. When I've watched him, considering Liverpool are wide open defensively, he looks to me like a player with the ball, a player to use when you've got possession. So I don't know if I'm that in favour of that one, really, but he's a good player, obviously.
So I said this a couple of years ago, I like Declan Rice. I think he's a really good player. Like, and I think I got absolute dog's abuse for the start of last season suggesting that we should sign him. And we do this video. Was it the start of last season, Tom, was it maybe? Or was it maybe the start of the season before? I can't remember. I think it was the start of last season. We do this video where we pretend we're the Liverpool director of football. We've got the money. And it's like a bit footy manager-ish.
Yeah, I've done a few of them.
Like just messing around. When I went, Declan Rice is one of my like absolute star buys, because and this is, you know, nearly two seasons ago now. A lot of people have jumped on the bandwagon because of his performance with England and stuff like that. But I've always thought there's something there. I think he's more than just win the ball back, play the ball type of a midfielder. Like, he carries the ball as well, doesn't he? I like Højbjerg. I know he came up in one of the graphics before the visits.
Yeah.
I really like Højbjerg. I don't think he's quite probably the age profile that Liverpool are looking for right now.
Mm.
But again, Højbjerg, Declan Rice, Tchouaméni, they're all 6 foot. Or 6 foot, 6 foot one.
Yeah.
And that's something I think Liverpool, from when we've won the league to where we are now, we've lost a bit of that physicality. And it kind of reminds me of Wenger when he had Emmanuel Petit and Patrick Vieira in the middle of the park and they were winning league titles. And then you looked at Arsenal in the lean years where they were just getting fourth. I say lean, it's an incredible achievement what Wenger did in those years.
Yeah.
But they were slight and agile and technical. Yeah. And you need that physicality.
Mm.
You need six-footers and the strength, because Man City have got it. Great teams in Europe have got the technical ability, but they're stacked physically now as well. So I think Liverpool are targeting a physical, ball-winning, probably box-to-box midfielder. And I don't watch enough footy other than Liverpool anymore to be able to name them. I can see the lads in the Premier League because I watch them when they come up against us.
Yeah.
But I used to know 20 years ago, I'd know every frigging midfielder in Europe. I don't do that now. It's just not who I am. I don't have that time in my life.
Yeah. No, I know what you mean, but I do think Liverpool still need that kind of Tchouaméni profile. A lot of what you've just said potentially relates to what will happen with Fabinho. I've seen the odd meme that, like, he could fund some of their transfer moves and stuff. But say, for example, we were to get a Declan Rice. I think one of the reasons Tchouaméni was special was because he can play as an eight, can play as a six.
Yeah.
Rice, for me, is a six. That's where Fabinho plays. So that's what would be difficult in that sense. But it just depends how the squad's going to look in the summer and who's going to go.
Let's start it as that basis then. Is Fabinho in your starting team next year? Because let's say you sign the two Tchouaméni replacements and you get Jude Bellingham in. Just on a fucking whim, why not? Are you playing him with Fabinho, Josh?
I just don't know. But I think he could play him with Fabinho, but it'd have to be Fabinho, not this imposter he was doing for the past 7 months. But I think Bellingham is. I've said I covered it a few months ago.
The title.
Yeah,
Fabinho the imposter.
I covered it a few months ago, didn't I? When I was talking about Bellingham, how he's not just this late arriving goal scoring mid. He's an absolute complete profile who does everything. So I think he could absolutely play with Fabinho, but it'd have to be the real Fabinho. You know what I mean? I don't know if that's there anymore. I really don't. I'm doubting it more every week.
Yeah, I mean, I must admit, the last when we won two games on the bounce, those days, fantastic they were. I really did think, oh, Fabinho's getting into a little bit of form.
I did.
And then obviously at the weekend, midweek, no.
What I've found is interesting is Klopp's just so reluctant to criticise any player in public. Fabinho, this season, he's got a few digs in towards, and it does suggest that Klopp, who knows a lot more than me and you,
doesn't... Speak for yourself. He definitely knows more than me, Tim.
Klopp must see something in Fabinho where he doesn't think it's the system around him. He thinks he's just not doing his job based on some of the things Klopp said this season. And if that's the case, you know, although he's 29, he's never been particularly mobile. He's been playing like over 2,000 minutes consistently since the, like 19-year-old or whatever. And maybe he's just a bit further on in his career than his age actually suggests in terms of a decline maybe or whatever. And that's just up to the people inside Liverpool to determine.
Do you think you could get money for Fabinho still? Do you think you get 40, 50 million
for
him?
Yeah, he'd still get a fair amount for him simply because of how many years he's got in his contract still. I think he's contracted to like 2026, so he's still got 3 years left on his deal. I can see him like Atletico Madrid or something like that for like 40, 50 million or something, but I just don't know whether...
That would be a smart move because you've got to sell assets if you want to buy.
Yeah, the only thing with it is if we did do that, we're also potentially losing Naby and Milner and Ox. That would be a fourth midfielder, and people would say we need this overhaul on that, and I agree. But that's a lot of change in one summer. It's a lot of new players to teach and a lot of work to do and stuff. So I don't know if Klopp will shy away from that or not, but it's just an open question really, isn't it? But we just
kind of... just keep Milner around for another year and play him there. And yeah, there you go, that'd be it, wouldn't it? That's how you solve that problem.
I know. He's going to be playing for Liverpool when he's got a free bus pass, I think.
Thanks to Josh and Chris for that one. Thank you guys for listening to this week's episode of the Redmen Weekly Podcast. Hope you've enjoyed those clips. Like I say, if you want to go and check out those entire shows or even just one or two of them, you don't have to listen to everyone. It's a bit like Netflix. You can dip in, dip out, take a pick of what you want and have a go at it. But yeah, they're available all in video form. They're also available in podcast forms directly into your native podcast app. So if you want to go and do that, head on over to redmenplus.com, sign up as a yearly club captain, use the code weekly and get it for £25. Our podcasts are also available on Spotify. If you're a Spotify user and you want to pay Spotify for their subscription service, if you just search for Redmen Plus Podcast on Spotify, sign up, and yeah, you can pay them directly and you can get them into your Spotify app if that is your thing that you love doing. We can't offer you no discount codes or anything like that on Spotify because, quite frankly, they don't let us do it. So my suggestion would be to head on over to the website and do it there. But listen, if you're an avid Spotify listener and you want to just use Spotify all the time, just search Redmen Plus Podcast on your Spotify app and you can sign up through them. Right, I've done plenty of talking, too much talking, some would say. So I'm going to shoot off. Thanks for listening to this episode of The Weekly. We'll be back next week. See you in a bit.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.